translation, this manifested cosmos is a wonderful creation of the interaction of the three material modes or the external energy of the Supreme Lord. This truth is fully known to you, yet I am but a poor woman, and as you know, I am not conversant with the truth. Therefore, I wish to see my birthplace once more. Purport, Dakshayani, Sati, knew very well that her husband, Lord Shiva, was not very much interested in the glaring manifestation of the material world, which is caused by the interaction of the three modes of nature. Therefore, she addressed her husband as Aja, which refers to one who has transcended the bondage of birth and death, or one who has realized his eternal position. She stated, the illusion of accepting the perverted reflection, the material or cosmic manifestation, to be real is not present in you because you are self-realized. For you, the attraction of social life and the consideration that someone is father, someone is mother, and someone is sister, which are illusory relationships, is already over. But because I am a poor woman, I am not so advanced in transcendental realization. Therefore, naturally, these appear to me as real. End of quote. Only less intelligent persons accept this perverted reflection of the spiritual world to be real. Those who are under the spell of the external energy accept this manifestation to be fact, whereas those who are advanced in spiritual realization know that it is illusion. Actual reality is elsewhere in the spiritual world. But as far as I am concerned, Sati said, I do not have much knowledge about self-realization. I am poor because I do not know the actual facts. I am attracted by my birthplace and I want to see it. One who has attraction for his birthplace, for his body, or for other such items mentioned in the Bhagavatam is considered to be like an ass or a cow. Sati might have heard all this many times from her husband, Lord Shiva. But because she was a woman, Yoshit, she still hankered after the same material objects of affection. The word Yoshit means one who is enjoyed. Therefore, a woman is called Yoshit. In spiritual advancement, association with Yoshit is always restricted because if one is like a play doll in the hands of Yoshit, then all his spiritual advancement is at once stopped. It is said those who are just like playthings in the hands of a woman, Yoshit Kriya Mrigeshu, cannot make any advancement in spiritual realization. Sati is referring to herself as a tattvavit, one who does not know the proper facts. She says this because she's attracted to her birthplace. Actually, it appears that she is conversant with the fact, and the philosophy she's speaking is correct. But she's nevertheless, despite knowing what is correct from the spiritual point of view, she's still attracted on the material platform. And she ascribes this to her being Dina, which means a poor woman. Dina means poor man, and Dina means female form, poor woman. She ascribes, it's understood, it's part of the tattva-gyan, or the knowledge of the philosophical knowledge. It's accepted that women in general are less fit for spiritual knowledge. So she states that. But practically speaking, we see that she was better situated than her father Daksha, who was a man and had achieved a position in the universal order that's only achieved by persons who perform many pious activities. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Yeshaṁ tvantagataṁ pāpam janānāṁ punya karmānāṁ tedvanga moha nirmukta bhajantya bhāṁ dṛdhavṛta. He says that, Lord Krishna says that persons who have performed pious activities in previous lives and in this life and who are freed from the duality of illusion, they can engage in my devotional service with great determination. So, Daksha was pious in previous life, otherwise he couldn't have got the position he had. And he was pious in this life, he was performing yajñas, he's a very pious person. But he wasn't free from the duality of illusion, he wasn't dvandva mukta. Dvandva means state of two-ness, so it means the conception of I and mine. That's how it's often presented. Dvandva also means quarrel. one pitted against or controversy. One person pitted against another. So he wasn't dvandva mukta. One who is not dvandva mukta cannot be dvandva mukta. It means that one who is not free from the duality of illusion cannot be free from quarrel. Because this I and my attitude that fosters it's controversy and fighting in this world. So the I and mine, of course, one may say then dvandva, and then what's the alternative? Ekatva, oneness. Just be, there's no difference. I am you and you are me. I am you and you are me, and we are all together sitting on a cornflake and all this. This is a song by those great philosophers I've been quoting recently. I don't know who wrote it, John Lennon or Paul McCartney, one of them. I am you and you are me and we are all together. And this is actually a famous song from the Western world, from my foolish youth. It brings out the foolishness actually. I am you and you and me and we are all together. That's considered a wonderful philosophy. But it's actually nonsense, because I'm not you and you are not me. But then they go on with the song and they sing it like it's some great philosophy, sitting on a cornflake waiting for the sun to come. And it's nonsense actually, but people think, oh, I'm a very great philosopher. Because they're idiots. So this is what this nirvisheshvad makes you into an idiot. I mean, there's no distinction between one thing and another. It's just foolishness. Just like someone says, oh, I'm very hungry. And Mayavadi will say, well, okay, just wait here for 20 minutes. And you come back and he says, well, I'm still hungry. So, well, you told me you're hungry, so I just had a big meal, and I am you, and you are me, so you should be okay. It's not very helpful, is it, to did you understand that, Ramapad? Are you hungry? It's difficult to understand. Huh? Try listening carefully and then gradually you can understand. So we also, in Krishna consciousness, we also have the concept of I and me, two-ness. That is essential. What is that? Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Sarvasva Toma Charane Sompiya Hoilam Paramashuki. I've dedicated everything to you at your lotus feet. And this way I've become very happy. And then in the end of the song it says, in the famous line is, Tumi to Thakur Tomara Kokor Boleya Jana Homore. You're my God. Oh, you are God, and please let me be known as your dog. So there's a two-ness. And at the end he says, what is that? To me, palaka to me, you are my maintainer. So there's this sense of two-ness, that I am yours and you are mine. You are my master, I am your servant. So then how does Krishna say dvandva mukta? That's also dvandva. sense of two-ness. But here, but Krishna doesn't say dvandva mukta exactly. He says, te dvandva moha virmukta, one from the illusion of two-ness. So there's a different, the Mayavadis, they say you should just free from two-ness. But Krishna says you should be free from the delusion of two-ness, the wrong kind of two-ness. The right kind of two-ness is wanted. The wrong kind ends you up in what Daksha got into, a big mess. Incidentally, this while we're on this topic, and you know, there's more of this more statements here that need annotating, annotatable statements. That women, there's so many statements within this purport that women, association should be with them restricted, because if one becomes a play doll in the hands of Yoshit, then all his spiritual advancement is one stopped. So that's another statement that needs annotating. You can have lots of annotations in the books. But by the way, distribute lots of books, lots of books while you can, because you never know, you might not get them in their original form soon. Get them out before we bring in the milk touched by the lips of a serpent. Some of the, you know, the books of Prabhupada commented on by people who don't have faith in Prabhupada. That's coming, it seems. So, what I was going to say. Yeah, this idea that men and women, it's all the same. And this is nirvisheshvad, actually. It means nirvishesh means without any distinction. No distinction. So they want to make that it's all one. But it's not. It's another form of nirvisheshva to say that women are as good as men. Women should be in the army. They can't pass the test, so they make the test easier for women. But the real test is when you're in a battle and the people shooting on the other side, they don't say, oh, it's a woman, okay, I won't fight so savagely. They might think like that, but that's stupid. Or otherwise, what happens is they fight more savagely because they feel insulted that if these people are sending women against me. That can also happen. So anyway, Daksha, he was pious, but he was not free from the duality of illusion. So that piety in itself doesn't give one spiritual knowledge. The Vedic process, the idea is that by performing, by karma, one will come to the platform of jnana. And karma, specifically by performing Vedic sacrifices, that is supposed to gradually give rise to jnana. But we see that it doesn't automatically or always happen. It didn't happen in the case of Daksha. It can happen if one is guided by an expert guru, but you see the karmakanda gurus, they're in the same category often as their disciples. So it becomes another dvandva or another paradox. How are you going to get out of that situation if your guru's in the same mess as you? Just like Shukracharya, his advice or the question he put to Bali Maharaj, that sarvasvam vishave datva murha, what is it, murha, what's the verb, I forgot it, katam murham, and I forgot the verb, whatever it is. So anyway, the purport is that he said that if you give everything to Vishnu, well, how will you maintain yourself? You won't have anything left. Of course, Vishnu says, ananyas chinta yanto maung ye janaf paryupasate te sha am nityabhi yuktanam yoga kshemam mahamyaham. But muha vatishyate katam, how will you live? But Shukracharya didn't have faith in that. So, as an example, he's of a useless guru. He was in Maya. He was supposed to be a guru, but he was in Maya. It happens. It's not unheard of. It's been going on since time immemorial. So, this Daksha, he was in Maya. And he continued to be in Maya, even after the Daksha Yagya and all this was over, and he got the head of a goat and everything, and he still was in Maya. He still couldn't get over the idea that I'm here to enjoy myself. And that was being, because he was pious, that was being utilized indirectly in the service of the Lord by filling up the prison by having lots of children. But it's something, you know, like it's like a good criminal gets the job of beating up the other criminals or something like that in the prison. He gets some privileged position, but he's still a criminal. Daksha's a criminal. He was organizing the yagya as a very pious religious activity, but his motive was selfish. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna talks about the demons who perform yagyas for the sake of prestige. So they want to look, they want to show people that they're very religious and very pious. It's just like there's so many criminals in India who politicians and other kinds of criminals who amass money by illegal means and then they build a temple. But one reason is it's a good way to siphon their black money. And another thing, it makes them look very pious and religious, but the money, the temple's built out of, it's all out of cheating people and exploiting people. But they like to, oh no, I see, I'm very pious, I'm very good. But they're not good, actually. So even the whole motive behind performing a yagya, it's mundane, which means that there has to be, that the out of the yagya came a fight. Well, it's not really surprising. I mean, in the yagya, there's a famous, what was it? Om Shanti Shanti, Vishram Shanti, and was it all, you know, all these ones? They say Vishram Shanti and Maha Swarge Shanti or something like this. Everything will be Shanti. But how will there be Shanti if everyone is simply rooting for themselves? Their interest is separate from Vishnu. They're not dedicated to Vishnu, therefore they must be selfish. So Shanti, 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 it's like saying cool down a bit, you know. But the disease is still there. That's all. Just, that's the idea. Be peaceful so we can all get on. Don't tread on anyone else's space. You know, respect other people's right to be demons. And you can also be a demon and forget Krishna. And we'll all do it peacefully. We'll all peacefully be envious of Krishna. But it doesn't happen. Because the seed of envy is there. So the real point of the yagya is that you're offering to Vishnu. That's the idea. That's supposed to cure the mentality of Shukracharya. Sarvasvam Vishnave Dattva Murha. If you give everything to Vishnu, then you become a fool and a rascal. But it's not. It's around the other way. If you don't give to Vishnu, you're a fool. We should give everything to Vishnu. So, actually these temples, they're a facility for people can imbibe the proclivity to give to Vishnu. But even the idea of giving to Vishnu that's also perverted because we can't really give to him. It's more, everything already belongs to him, but it's more, it's a beginning for people who think that everything is mine. They think I'm giving to Vishnu. But actually the proper understanding is that everything belongs to him anyway. I don't own anything. So I should, the only thing I should do is to dedicate my life in his service. So these temples are meant for that. Often, of course, the temple, it's a facility for people to live very comfortably, the priest or whatever, to live, or maybe not very comfortably, but everyone has to do something for a living, so some people are priests. That's why the priest is supposed to be a Brahmin, and Brahmin means one who's been trained in Vedic knowledge by a guru who trains him in the proper understanding that everything is meant for Vishnu. It's not meant for my enjoyment. That I'm here to serve him, and I may accept offerings on behalf of others, and he maintains me, but my maintenance and my sense gratification, that's not the goal of doing this. It's there because I need to serve him, but that's not the goal of doing it. So this mentality is lost in the material world. That's why we're in the material world. And in the temples also, because if there's no hearing, if there's no system of not just formally hearing, that just like I've seen in some temples, they have this, in some temples, some wealthy patrons have sponsored Brahmins, and then they have to read the Shastra 1 hour a day or something. But it's not just a formality, but there should be, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, the living source, source, living source, not tomato sauce, living source. Source means source of transcendental energy and knowledge. So persons who their life is dedicated to Vishnu, by hearing from them, the spirit of the temple remains alive, or the spirit of Krishna consciousness remains alive. And that's why we see here in Tamil Nadu, the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya was so strong, and now most of the traditional Sri Vaishnavas, they've gone away from, I mean, they may keep a picture of Ranganathan or Tirupati Balaji, but then they'll have pictures of many of them, these, you know, various bogus gurus and bogus bhagavans, because no one's taught them. Even Rasaraj Prabhu, who's from an Iyengar family, I was shocked when he told me, it was only when he read Prabhupada's books in America that he knew what karma and reincarnation was. He never knew. So he's born in an Iyengar family, and they offered all their food to the picture of Ranganatha Swami. He didn't know this. He had no idea. Probably in childhood they taught him some pasarams and some Bhagavad Gita shlokas and this, and quite likely. But he didn't know that. Because there's no system to teach spiritual knowledge. And so everything becomes a mess. And not just spiritual knowledge, just like I say, even now there's some families, they might teach Bhagavad Gita shlokas, but then they might even teach the translation of it in Tamil or whatever. And Tamil Brahmins, they don't speak Tamil, they speak English no more. Isn't it? There's Chittahari, he's Tamil Brahmin family. Now he's learning Tamil, so he can use it for preaching Krishna consciousness. So I was going to say something anyway. It's not just a matter of formally learning, but the whole spirit and the siddhanta, the proper understanding, has to be imparted. Otherwise, what happens, everyone in this material world has the idea that everything that I see, everything that comes within the range of my vision is meant for my enjoyment. I'll enjoy it if I can. And the only reason I wouldn't, just like I might see some gold in the shop, and the only reason I don't pick it up and take it away is because I'm afraid that I'll be punished for doing so, either in this life or the next. So otherwise you want to enjoy it. That's why they put the items in the window to attract you. So why don't people just smash the window and take it? Because They want it, but they don't because they're afraid. It's fear which keeps people in line. So everyone has that idea. So if you come to the temple also, you may think, well, you know, what's in it for me? What do I get here? So, but the idea is to train people that you're giving, you have to, when you come to the temple, you have to give something. And with the idea that certainly your best, but the teaching should be there, certainly your best interest will be served by giving, but then you should understand what your best self-interest is also. People give in the temple, they think, well, I'll get something back, I'll get, just like at Tirupati, people are confident that I give 1 lakh rupees and I'll get a crore back. They're confident, and it works. But that's not the proper approach. That I'll give and I'll get back more. So the temples of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness are meant for teaching or inculcating this attitude that we are meant for service. We're all meant not to see the temple as a means of my maintenance. Of course, anyone who's serving, that may be there, but we have to be very careful that people, we don't attract people mainly for the purpose of maintenance, because it may be seen like that. Well, you know, it's pretty tough in the world outside, and I like chanting Hare Krishna, so I'll do a little chanting and little service, and, you know, I get food, clothing, and everything, so it's okay. But no real motive to serve Krishna or dedicate one's life to Krishna. I remember some years ago, it had been going on in one temple, ISKCON temple, for years, that members of the congregation, they just come every morning and take prasadam. They just come at prasadam time and time. So, well, we're also initiated devotees. And they'd maybe do a little service here or there. And then the temple president just stopped it, and it was like a revolution. And they were thinking, it's our right. But it's... because we're initiated. But the temple president rightly stopped it, because prasadam is there for... arrangement is there for those who are... daily prasadam is arranged for those who are giving their full time and full energy to the temple. Otherwise there may be a payment system or something like that. But if we start to see that the temple is a place for my bodily maintenance, then we get in the same consciousness as Daksha, wrongly became angry. He made a big mess. So this is the whole point. Throughout all the Bhagavatam, these basic points are to be understood. We are not the enjoyer. We are meant for serving Krishna. If we don't have the selfless service to Krishna, if we don't have that consciousness, then there are going to be so many problems. People live. They have these useless peace conferences, and they may say, well, it was a successful conference that we made a compromise. You see, and there's peace. This Henry Kissinger got the Nobel Peace Prize after years of advising Richard Nixon how to bomb Vietnam and bomb Kampuchea and wage the war. They realized that, hey, we're not going to win it, and it's becoming extremely unpopular at home. Okay, let's pull out of this war. So Henry Kissinger negotiated a peace settlement with the Viet Cong. It means more or less they lost the war and they surrendered. They didn't achieve what they wanted. And the Viet Cong just took over South Vietnam. And he got the Nobel Peace Prize. Nonsense. Because as a politician, he said, yes, well, actually, peace is very good, and sorry about dropping all those bombs, you know, we love you, really, but okay, let's have peace, as it was a political necessity. And he got the Nobel Peace Prize. But then where's the, you know, it may seem that there's peace, that we, that there's going to be war between India and Pakistan. Maybe 4 or 5 years ago, there was all the, it's going to be war, everyone was sure there was war, and the American government was pulling their citizens out of India. And in India, most of the people, they didn't even bother talking about it, because, you know, they always talk about it, they don't do anything, they haven't done anything since. They never had a war since 1971 or something, but they talk about it from time to time as a political strategy. So, and then they say, well, there are frantic negotiations between the American Secretary of State and advising the Pakistanis to, you know, to cool down, and they, oh, we made the peace. Well, they didn't make any peace. It appears to them. But the violence is going on, the slaughter of animals, for instance, that's a major manifestation of it. And where is the peace? They say that this United Nations was made to stop war, and there's been, like, since it was formed, there's been non-stop several wars all over the world ever since. They don't even bother calling it a war these days. They used to be somewhat gentlemanly and declare war. Nowadays, they just bomb you, and then this and that, and you realize, oh, now we're at war. So it's just an illusion, this talk of peace, and we all love each other. And time to time, you know, these bogus groups, they have, what is it, yagya for world peace and all this, and then while they're doing it, you know, it's not that in Iraq, the Americans say, oh, there's a yagya, okay, we're not going to bomb anyone today. And they just go on with their business and killing the animals the same as ever. Prabhupada pointed out that you're never going to have peace as long as you're killing animals, slaughtering millions of animals. Never going to happen. That's the immediate cause, and then the mool, or the root cause, is the enviousness of Krishna. So the Bhagavatam teaches the actual principles by which individuals and the whole of human society can attain peace and self-realization. But people are so foolish that they reject this as something harmful. Just like Prabhupada is following the Bhagavatam conclusion, he's commenting here about women, the role of women, and their stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. People think, oh, this is terrible, this is anti-woman, he hates women. He's just stating the actual fact, which we need to know if we're going to make spiritual advancement. Prabhupada is not envious of anyone. That within this world, there are various bodies, and the human male body is especially meant for self-realization, and the female body is especially meant for blocking self-realization. So, it may be that a female takes up the path of self-realization. That doesn't mean that by doing so she immediately gives up the mentality of trying to catch a man. Or they may put the two things together, just like Srila Prabhupada wrote in one letter, you know, all the women who are joining our movement, they're doing so to find a husband. That was his analysis. So, if we say this, we may be considered women haters or something, even though Prabhupada said the same thing. But it's just a statement of fact, that's all. If we can't accept it, then it means that we're contaminated by the modern nirvisheshvad of thinking that men and women, it's all the same. I'm harping on these points because, well, they are coming up in the purports, and also because, as you may know, within our movement at the present time, there's a strong misunderstanding that men and women should equal in all respects, which Prabhupada didn't. They say he did, but I don't see Prabhupada made any women GBCs. Or he said that he would have made one of them a GBC, but he didn't because she was a woman. And that's interpreted to mean that because the men were so biased that Prabhupada, for their sake, didn't do it. But he, anyway, I don't want to get into a political discussion here, but there are some serious misunderstandings. And if we don't understand these points, it's going to block our self-realization, because women are a block in self-realization. And until we're self-realized, as the Bhagavatam says, we shouldn't attempt to fail to see the differences. We're going to get in trouble if we think, well, it's a woman, but you know, she's a spirit soul also. We should think like that, but at the same time, we have to understand what is our position. Just like you may see a tiger and think, well, it's a tiger, it's a spirit soul, so let me embrace it. But then you and the tiger will become one, not by embracing, but by you becoming the tiger's lunch. So in the same way, you may think that, well, here's a woman and we're all spirit souls, so, you know, let me embrace. And then you and she become one. in Maya. So it's a simple point that as long as we're in this material world, we have a dual identification. We're always spirit soul, but we have to act in terms of our position in within society also. We can't neglect that. And unless you come to the platform of avadhut, then one has to act within the varnashram system. And even the avadhut babajis, like Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Vamsi Das Babaji Maharaj, they didn't hang out with women. They were very strict about that. Even though they didn't follow the rules and regulations of the Vedas or even of the Vaishnav system. They didn't follow Well, especially Vamsi Das Babaji Maharaj, he didn't follow any sadhana, he didn't chant japa or any sadhana, he didn't do anything like that. But he also, there's no record of him associating with women, because it's, even if you are so self-realized that you can do so, but sadhus don't do that. Because it may set a bad example for others. So these things have to be understood. The varnashram system is very restrictive on association between men and women, and for sadhus especially, because otherwise they'll be fall down. Or if there's not fall down, there'll be rumors of it, which is in the modern world, there's the idea you mix very freely, and what's wrong with that? And people are maybe used to that, but it's a block on the path of self-realization. This should be understood. Without understanding that, then it'll be very difficult to make proper advancement in spiritual life. And people say, well, don't see the body. It's easy to say that, but philosophically we should not see the body, but practically speaking, as Sati is saying here, I know the philosophy, but it's difficult to follow it. She's honest about that. Okay, any question about this?
You said about the modern meditation, those who are getting some money by illegal means, and they build
the politicians who are getting money by illegal means, yeah.
And how does it have a relationship with kings getting the money in a legal way and using it for building temples?
How does it relate to kings getting money in a legal way? It doesn't relate at all. It's completely different. Kings, they tax. They're allowed to tax, but then they use the money for the welfare of the citizens. And one of the things is building temples. But these modern politicians, they exploit, they cheat, they extort, and they take bribes and so many things, and then the temple is built. It's like a channel for laundering their illegal money, and it's not built for the welfare of the citizens at all. It's not built from a pious motive at all. It's complete, the difference between day and night. What are you going to say?
I heard that we should discriminate the source from where money comes from.
We should discriminate according to where the money comes from. Yes, we should. Of course, if we want to take only completely white money, we probably won't get any at all in the modern age, because modern business, the way it goes on, there's no way to do it without some bribing and this and that. You just can't do it. You can't do anything. Bribing or cheating. But just like when Prabhupada, some of his so-called disciples started making drug business, illegal drugs, and they were getting a lot of money. And Prabhupada said, he told them to stop it. And he told the devotees that they were being offered big money for printing books, which Prabhupada wanted so much. He told, don't take it. So, money that's got directly from breaking the principles, that we can deduce from that. Prabhupada didn't like that. On the other hand, so I'm told, in Fiji, when Prabhupada went there and he initiated Vasudev and his brother, and they were going to build a big temple there. They were shopkeepers, and shopkeeper means they were the richest men on the island. They had, I guess, a chain of shops. And I was told this by one devotee. Then Prabhupada, they said, well, now we'll have to stop selling meat in our shop. And Prabhupada said, no, there's no need to change anything. I guess, and gradually they did. Gradually they got that realization. Exactly why Prabhupada said that, I don't know. Maybe he thought they weren't ready for that, and then gradually they did by themselves. Another man, he told me in Hyderabad that he was doing toddy business, making this toddy. It's illegal arak. Is that what they call it here? Arak? Illegal alcohol. What do you call it?
Sharab.
Sharab, yeah, that's from the Arab. Sharab in Hindi. Well, that's a little different. The arak, it's distilled. The toddy means it's taken from the date palm, and then they, I don't know exactly what they do, but anyway, it's illegal alcohol. So he came to Prabhupada and said that, well, should I stop? After hearing your lectures, I realized this is wrong, and should I stop this? And he told me that Prabhupada thought for a few minutes and said, well, you have to maintain your family. He thought about it for a few seconds. Prabhupada was doing business, and he wrote in the purport that, in the one purport in Bhagavad Gita, that if a businessman says, for you I make no profit, you can understand it's a lie, because without a profit he can't live. There's no point for him doing any business. So Prabhupada must have known about these things. Prabhupada was manufacturing alcohol, this pharmaceutical alcohol. So who knows what it was used, you know, people may have used it for other things. I don't know, you can only speculate, but Prabhupada didn't want to take money from this illegal drugs, but then other things, that's like heavily, grossly and sinful, and it's also considered very bad in society. I mean, you'll get a heavy prison sentence if you get arrested for that. It's considered something very antisocial. Although it's going on, I mean, I always wonder how it is that America has such great technology that they can, you know, they can read the writing on a coin that's fallen on the street in Moscow from their satellite, but they can't stop shiploads and plane loads of illegal drugs coming into America all the time. So something funny is going on there. So, but anyway, Prabhupada was very much against that. Where to draw the line, that we have to see.
Daksha was engaged in populating the universe. Yeah. Such works by Prajapati, are they going today, even today? Or?
Are the Prajapati still populating the universe? Probably not right now, but at the... within the universe, there are several pralayas or devastations within a day of Brahma. So there are certain times when they get busy, or there's a need for population. After each Manu, according to Jiva Goswami, I think Sridhar Swami said there isn't, and Jiva and Vishwanath said there is, after each Manu. And that's quite a lot. I mean, by our time scale, it seems like a long break, but 14 Manus in one day of Brahma. So, it's quite a lot of work to do.
Partial,
yeah. Not the whole universe is destroyed. But enough of it that needs some populating. And then each day of Brahma means the full scale, set up the whole thing, you know, set up a new system altogether. New system means it's the same system, but it all has to be put in place again. At the beginning of each day of Brahma. So, Hare Krishna.